your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Monday night, October 20th, 2025, as we record this new show. In this episode, we continue our off-season preparation by reviewing the Chicago White Sox 2025 starting pitchers. If you missed our previous show, we had this exercise for the bullpen, and the consensus was that the White Sox need to add at least two more relievers this offseason to the bullpen. On the starting pitching front, help could be on the way with multiple internal options. Many of the starters who got hurt during spring training will be returning at some point in 2026, like Kai Bush and Drew Thorpe. There's also two of the best White Sox prospects remaining in Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. And as we talked about in the bullpen episode, maybe even the idea someone like Grant Taylor could get another shot to become a starting pitcher. But adding a dependable starter through free agency or trade is not a terrible idea. Quite opposite, actually. However, with the cost of pitching these days, what are some realistic options for the White Sox? So let's break it down and recap the 2025 pitching staff and look ahead to help out with your upcoming offseason plan projects. And joining me as the managing editor of SoxMachine.com, it's Jim Margulis. And Jim, hello. The bullpen episode was fun.
Was it?
Well, we know that unit was not great. And yeah, like I mentioned in the intro, case if you are catching up on your White Sox podcast listeners, Jim and I both agree when you do your offseason plan projects, realistically through free agency, trade, Rule 5 draft, waiver claims, you need to find at least two relievers. Probably one of them has to be left-handed to add to the bullpen. With the starting pitching for the Chicago White Sox, I felt like watching this season and looking at the season in numbers, Jim, that what I saw with my eyes do not match with the data. So when I tell you that the starting pitching for the White Sox, the starters, had a 4.39 ERA, not terrible, ranked 21st in Major League Baseball. But the fielding independent pitching, the FIP, 4.89, second worst in Major League Baseball. That ranks 29th. Only the Colorado Rockies had a worse starting pitching FIP in 2025. The White Sox WAR was 7.5, ranking 26th in Major League Baseball. So when I propose those numbers to you, what did you like about the White Sox starting pitching staff in 2025?
Well, it's funny that their ERA is better than their FIP because you would normally associate that with good defense, and the White Sox didn't really have a good defense. They had a better than in previous years, but still below average, especially at some positions, depending on who was healthy over the course of the season. So minor miracle that they finished with that ERA, especially considering the circumstances behind that. I guess, starting with that, the fact that like the ERA was not ghastly, the fact that they had an entire layer of depth eradicated during spring training with Tommy John surgeries and never really paid the price for that, I think is admirable. That they had, Yoenir Gomez step up, some good luck with openers. Adrian Hauser, another one that popped in the middle of the season, carried a lot of weight for the time he's with the White Sox. So they did a good job of problem solving during the season to make up for the emergencies that inevitably arise when it comes to like searching for sixth and seventh starters over the course of the year. So that was cool. Also, Shane Smith, big, huge finding from Rule 5, from the Rule 5 draft, like him never, ever becoming like a problem. Usually with the Rule 5 pick, even if they do make it over the course of a season, there's usually points over the course of the year where like, God, I hope they get injured, even like injured in quotes, because they're struggling. They're not keeping their heads above water and they're just suffering at the position. And if only they could get a break because they have to be on the roster, active roster for 90 days. And maybe they come back and they look better. And like there was, some brief periods where he struggled, but like none different than a rookie struggling, like a normal rookie who's expected to be on the roster for the whole year. So that he was, a nominal all-star, but still kind of remarkable that he was still considered the White Sox all-star. And then you had that rough patch in the middle of the season, but figured out a way around it. And part of it was just maintaining the strength that he showed in spring training of just that increased velocity, but also just got mentally tougher over the course of the year. Kind of developed some calluses for getting beat and not letting that scare him away from the strike zone and dampen his aggressiveness. So that was really cool to see on a personal level. So I think, at the top, you had Smith, being the number one starter for most of the year, especially like after Adrian Hauser, before and after Adrian Hauser left. And then, at the bottom of the rotation, you just had kind of a revolving door. But between, the stopgaps they found and also, Will Venable sprinkling in an opener in a relaxed fashion of not making a big deal out of it, just occasionally trying it, they were able to get by and avoid the disaster that I thought was looming because of just, losing Kai Bush, losing Drew Thorpe, losing Mason Adams. Like, they were all supposed to get starts. Juan Carella was somebody who might be able to get starts, like, and just having four of those guys. And then not even talking about like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, who were not, for health and other reasons, were not able to step up. Like, if you told me none of those guys would make a major league start for the White Sox before they all got hurt, I think, like, what happened? How bad was it that they even win 50 games again this year? And like, they were not fine necessarily, but could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, and we talked about when Ethan Katz's contract was not renewed. And again, what the White Sox do in the pitching front probably will determine the type of pitching coach they want to hire. And the kind of person Brian Bannister, who's still the director of pitching for the Chicago White Sox, wants to work with. That some of the issues that the White Sox had in starting pitching front, we talked about it, was arm talent. But there are some starting pitchers, like Shane Smith has premium stuff. Davis Martin, even though he doesn't strike out a lot, has showcased premium stuff. Sean Burke was shocking us, throwing 99 miles per hour with his four-seam fastball. So there's some tools here. So maybe that's why the vibes felt better than the actual numbers do, Jim, because I was with you on the starting pitching front. It's like all the White Sox weren't that bad. But yeah, second to last in FIP, they ranked bottom five in WAR. I don't know if that's the best the White Sox could have done with the talent on hand and dealing with all of the injuries. But it appears the White Sox starting pitching has room for improvement. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. I agree with you as far as the things I liked about the White Sox pitchers in 2025, Shane Smith, also Adrian Hauser. When we look back in that season, almost like a godsend for the White Sox to get through that period and becoming the White Sox most interesting trade candidate entering the deadline. And I look back, Jim, how would have 2025 gone if Shane Smith wasn't as good as he was and the White Sox didn't have those 11 starts from Adrian Hauser?
Yeah, no, it's scary. And also,
Like, to your
and
point,
there's
did they
always
even win
luck.
50 games?
Yeah, maybe not. And Adrian Hauser, like, he reminded me of, I guess, short term Johnny Cueto, like a Vrbo or Airbnb Johnny Cueto, like just not long term rental, short term rental, and just not, even though he's not the most remarkable pitcher you've ever seen, like Cueto, did not have his peak stuff and still produced a near peak season or like a fine decline season, off when he was getting Cy Young votes, and like Hauser just showed up looking 5 years younger, basically. So, good finds, and they did have some swings and misses in that department. Like Aaron Civale did not work out well. So they took multiple shots. They kind of dealt in volume when it come to fi when it came to finding starting pitchers. So they didn't like their hit rate wasn't 100% or close to it. But they took a lot of shots and they tried to solve the problem. They're active about it, and I think that's for a team. It has as many roster spots as the White Sox have to audition players and to give playing time to. It's It's one of the benefits is you can find reclamation projects a lot easier just because you're not only working with one spot to and you have to pick, you have to be really choosy about that one guy who may or may not work out for that one spot. If you have two or three or like a long relief job that might become starting pitching, then you know that I imagine that becomes more a better landing spot. Like, you know, Martin Perez worked out kind of, you know, when he was healthy, he worked out well enough. Like Bryce Wilson did not. So like that's the kind of win some, lose some throughout the season. But because they had so many starts or innings that needed filling, like they didn't have to have the hit rate that they needed. Like when Cueto, for instance, had that year that he had, like they needed him to be good to have a chance of contending, and needed to hit with that one signing versus the White Sox. Yeah. Didn't work out. Just churn through and try again.
So then let's move over to what we didn't like about the White Sox starting pitching in 2025. And I'll start here. The White Sox had the fewest innings pitched from their starting rotation. And that makes sense. If you listen to our previous episode, the White Sox bullpen pitched the second most innings in Major League Baseball, only a third of an inning behind the Los Angeles Dodgers for the most innings pitched by a bullpen during the regular season. 28th in walk rate. This is a metric that we see a lot quoted in the Sox Machine comments section. Our readers, our listeners, walk rate is an issue for White Sox starting pitchers. Strikeout rate, the White Sox ranked 24th in Major League Baseball, which, as we know, strikeouts are critical for success for starting pitching staffs across the league, especially when you don't have a great defense like the Chicago White Sox do. So those are my three bullet points, and let's call them opportunities for improvement, Jim, in 2026, when looking or trying to come up with a plan for your offseason plan project around the starting pitching. I think these are three key metrics, very simple metrics. But if the White Sox can get more innings, they can decrease the walk rate, picking up some strikeouts, then this starting pitching staff theoretically should be a lot better than it was in 2025. What did you not like about the White Sox starting pitchers in 2025?
I think at an individual level, because you hit upon the team points pretty well there, and I already mentioned the injuries, which I didn't like, having not being able to see Drew Thorpe. That stings. Dylan Seastrick.
We still don't know, do we? We still don't know if he's someone the White Sox encounter.
Yeah, and it's more a matter of like, you know, given that he had the first elbow surgery and then Tommy John surgery. I don't know what kind of margin for error he has with his velocity, because he is somebody, you know, he has a plus changeup and can throw whenever. And that's, you know, it's cool. It's definitely a major league pitch. And the fact that he produced decently enough with the White Sox in his first go around, despite not having his usual mechanics, like it didn't really have his slider. It was kind of blending with his cutter, didn't have like his best velocity. So the fact that he fared okay, I think, until his very last outing speaks to the strength of that changeup. And so like, if he comes back with a healthy elbow and maybe gains a tick of velocity and the slider gains its sharpness, then, you know, perhaps, you know, there's nothing, nothing missed but time. They'll see a better version of him, and you'll see that, you know, maybe the Dylan Cease trade wasn't a winner for the White Sox. Right now, it looks like they traded him for, right now, the uncertainty around Thorpe, it's not great. But like, if Thorpe comes back and looks like, say, a number three, number four starter, you know, it's not a total loss. It's more of a, you know, mild loss, I guess, that you trade a number two starter like Cease for a number four, who's more, you know, time friendly when it comes to the salaries making the team control period, but not really somebody who makes the roster better. You really can't do many of those trades, and they'll be like running in place. So like, you know, that's, I think, the most costly one. I think of, you know, Kai Bush was kind of found money with the way that Angels trade worked, especially with Carroll looking like a promising catcher. That, you know, the fact that Bush rebounded in a similar fashion with the White Sox and looked like a capable number five at times. And then, you know, The way he wore down and then Tommy John surgery, like we'll see how he comes back. But Thorpe is really the one that was missing from that group in terms of having a mainstay that the White Sox rotation needs, because right now it's Shane Smith and Davis Martin and kind of, I don't know, you got a whole bunch of murkiness there in terms of who wants to,
Right.
either who wants to, if you want to like place a value judgment, or whose stuff is actually starter worthy. And I think, among those fringe types like Sean Burke, when it comes to Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon, I think Burke's arsenal is more limited. Just the, it's fastball, good fastball, good curveball, but it's just a hard way to make a living locating the curveball, four strikes and chase pitches over and over and over again, multiple times through the order against lefties. So that, like, I get, and I think that's like a reliever there, if nothing else, but still, I think, showed flashes enough to where, if they have open rotation spots, may as well give them a look. I think Jonathan Cannon's season baffles me a little bit in terms of, you always hear about how he's tinkering and fiddling with his arsenal, and the White Sox, coaches, Ethan Katz didn't really seem to like it, or Brian Bannister didn't seem like it. Then talking about like he had the wrong grip on a sinker, like, well, why didn't anybody step in and say like, hey, why not throw a two seam sinker versus one? Like, just I don't quite know when it comes to Cannon, like who's in charge, or it's or if it's a case where you do have to give pitches a certain amount of time to see if they work, and then it turns out that they don't, but you can't like go toggling back and forth between grips and never actually learn anything about them. So I think next year's gonna be a big year for Cannon, because in his form he showed last year, like getting lit up by lefties, not missing bats, not getting grounders, like that's not a major league starter. A year after he was like the steadiest White Sox starter. I think
Right.
next year's gonna be a tiebreaker in terms of whether the league adjusted to him past the point of no return and he's gonna be living on the fringe, for the next few years, or if it was a case of like, no, you really got to figure this out, and it's really just one pitch that helps him get the ball on the ground more, and he's back to being like a capable back end starter.
Yeah, I went back to my MLB draft reports for Sox Machine when Jonathan Cannon was at the University of Georgia. This tinkering idea has been going on since he was in college. Like, draft eligible sophomore, big four seam fastball, enter his junior year. It's not a four seamer anymore, it's a sinker. And he changed the way that he pitched from his sophomore year. So he's been doing this for a while. And maybe whoever is the next pitching coach, or even Brian Bannister, somebody just needs Jonathan Cannon to pick a style and just stick with it. And see if you get anything out of it, whether that's a starter or a reliever. You mentioned Sean Burke, so let's get into that, because I agree with you with Burke, with his four seam velocity and his curveball. At the very least, you got a reliever. We'll get to Shane Smith in a second, but Davis Martin and Sean Burke, when we're doing our offseason plans, and I have created that Google sheet, so if you want it, everyone, I'll include a link to it in the podcast page that you can make a copy for yourself. Really helps you out building out your 26-man roster. Right now, for my offseason plan project, just because of so many holes the White Sox have with such little cash, I consider Davis Martin and Sean Burke guarantees to make the starting rotation based on what the White Sox have on hand right now, Jim. I don't know if they're going to end the 2026 season in the starting rotation, but is it safe to say, with what the White Sox currently have and our listeners working with to start their offseason plan projects, are Davis Martin, Sean Burke's guarantees to be in the starting rotation?
Martin doesn't look that impressive when it comes to peripheral strikeout rate, et cetera. I think with him, he's earned enough benefit of the doubt as far as somebody who can get through five, six innings and in relatively easy form, or at least, efficiency to where, he gets through six on 80 something pitches. And now it's time to turn over the bullpen, because he's going to be going the third time through, or, maybe fourth time through. And so, good job, tip of the cap, turn over the bullpen. And Smith just, he got stronger as the year went on. It's a really funny Statcast page when you look at Shane Smith's Statcast page, because its off-speed value is deep blue. And the fastball value is bright red, and just like seems like a reliever. It seems like a one-trick pony, and yet he it's a case of, I always go back to Bartolo Colon, but also like Lance Lynn. You get some guys who can just shape a fastball and can run a fastball, can accidentally cut a fastball in the case of Smith, but all, sometimes he gets the ride on it he wants, sometimes he gets some cut, learned how to get some sink on it. And so, like, he can attack quadrants against different handedness. And so that seems good enough for now. Perhaps the league adjusts to it, and all of a sudden that slider that he doesn't like that much, or the curveball he doesn't like that much, has to shape up. But sometimes guys, if they're healthy and they have that, real strong velocity, unpredictable movement, can get more out of their fastball and a higher fastball percentage than you'd think. It's, very much antithetical to the way Brian Bannister preaches of just fewer fastballs, and not just him, but just across the league, fewer fastballs, more breaking pitches. But some guys can do it. I think it's a gift, and I think it's a good thing for a rotation to have somebody who can attack the strike zone with straight stuff and not have to be so fine with pitches that are harder to locate. So I think they're both set, and they do it in very different ways. But yeah, around that is a little bit murky.
So back to Shane Smith. What could really torpedo any plans for 2026 of the fringe idea of the White Sox being a stronger contender than they have in recent years, which they haven't been at all. So please don't laugh at me, podcast listeners. But let's say if you want the White Sox and you want them to have a goal in 2026 to win, let's say, 70 games. You need Shane Smith in 2026 to be as strong as Shane Smith was in 2025. A lot of career highs for Shane Smith, including innings pitch, Jim. Do you have any concerns of a Shane Smith regression? And is that something our podcast listeners have to prepare for when working out their offseason plan projects?
I think you have to be on guard against it, but not necessarily, or not for any specific reason.
Okay.
The just standard pitcher caveats, like maybe he loses a tick or two of velocity because he's dealing with something, or the league finally realizes, like, oh, it's just really try to force him to throw his slider, and easier said than done probably, but still, just there are weaknesses in his profile to where, like, if he had to all of a sudden turn to a pitch that's not good for him, it could blow up on him to where, yeah, he does look like a Rule 5 pick again. But he got stronger as the year went on. I think he
Yes.
handled the stamina and endurance questions as well as he possibly could, given that he hadn't thrown 100 innings in a season, collegiate or professional, joining the White Sox organization. So, that's, I think, fine. And I think the league saw enough of him and had enough to plan around, given that he was one of the mainstays of the rotation, led the team in starts. So it's not like he was a surprise to see. They didn't open for him. They didn't really, like, do anything tricky with him. He was always on the mound in the first inning. So I think teams saw him and lost to him. I think over the course of the season, like, as a league, like, he was an above average pitcher. So they did more losing than winning against him. So I don't see any specific reasons that regression should arrive. Kind of like Cannon in a way we just talked about, like, something could turn, and all of a sudden he's back to being somebody who is on the outside looking in. But just I can't find one reason to think, like, he shouldn't be an okay starter. Maybe not all-star or top of the rotation. I think ideally somebody would step up to knock him down a peg to where you're not counting on him. Like, if somehow the White Sox, through some kind of weird loophole in the Major League rule book or constitution, ended up in the postseason with a 60-win record, like, he would be starting game one. Like, that's not exactly what you want. But certainly, like, he looked like somebody who could start game three or game four the way he pitched last year. And I think that's kind of, if you are planning Smith to be in the rotation long term by the time the White Sox are good again, I think, like, he's fine. It's like the Michael Bolton thing. Like, why should he have to change? Like, he's good. Everybody else sucks. Everybody else has to get on their level or above him to be in his rightful place.
The way that Shane Smith finished gave me confidence that even though I am posing this question, it's just something to think about to help prepare you with your offseason plans. I'm not too concerned about a Shane Smith regression. Obviously, to your point, Jim, the injury. Like, how does he feel in spring training? a full off-season workload, because again, he got drafted by the White Sox in the winter meetings, and it's like, get ready for a new organization. We don't know what your role is, and we didn't know until the end of spring training when he's throwing 98-99 against the Dodgers during a spring training game that it's like, hey, this guy could be our number five starter to start the season. And of course, he ends up becoming the White Sox All-Star. So I'm wondering on how a full offseason preparing and knowing that you are a starting pitcher with the Chicago White Sox, if that makes him stronger and more dependable physically as he enters camp and he has a little bit more confidence that he can contain, or I should say maintain, the way that he performed, especially the last 2 months of the 2025 regular season. So I'm pretty confident with Shane Smith. Maybe a poor man's Dylan Cease, you know, someone that doesn't consistently get into the seventh inning, but he keeps you in ball games against the toughest lineups, gets you through five and two thirds, maybe six innings in each outing. Maybe he's more of a 150 innings type of starting pitcher, and you're still looking for those frontline starters that could take on more innings, and that'll be the next topic here. But I'm not too concerned about Shane Smith and regression going into next season. I still think you can count on him, White Sox fans. Someone that I'm curious about, because he made more starts than Adrian Hauser, to our shock, if you didn't watch our video of trying to guess all 62 Chicago White Sox players in 2025, it took us a while to remember him, but Yoenis Gomez for the White Sox, Jim. I thought he did an admirable job stepping in after the White Sox traded Adrian Hauser. Somebody had to make starts, and he took the ball. What would you do if you were with the White Sox and advising Brian Bannister? Like, what do you do with Yoenis Gomez?
I think you treat him as fifth starter.
Okay.
Penciling, knowing that that always changes, and that, you know, especially it often changes on good teams, the fifth starter. But right now he's out of options. So, you know, when you look at, you know, who's going to have to be carried, assuming he's fully operational and you know, wouldn't open the season on the injured list, like he would be, it would be hard to imagine him being squeezed off this pitching staff unless somehow like he looked just really terrible. Like just the stuff was lagging. He was missing ticks and getting lit up. And the White Sox had a surplus of guys who looked like him, but he's also been DFA'd a number of times. He's been outrighted. So like, you know, he can't just be snuck through waivers. Like if the White Sox try to remove him from the roster, he can elect free agency. So he's like out of options two times over in the fact that like even they can't even waive him because he can go somewhere else if need be. So that I think dictates the issue for him and creates a certain amount of leverage. And also like he was fine / competitive / evolving. Like the same thing you mentioned about Smith, like going into a season knowing that he was going to be a starting pitcher, like or going to the offseason knowing he's going to be a starting pitcher. Same thing can be said for Gomez, who was expanding his arsenal as the year went on and throwing deeper into games as the year went on. So, you know, they're similar. In the case of Smith's side, he kind of narrowed his arsenal as the season went on, whereas Gomez expanded and became more of a kitchen sink guy. But still, I think the thing there is, you know, well, he's probably going to be getting starts. Like I don't see him going into short relief, if nothing else. So he's got to keep that arsenal expanded and you know, keep developing all of his pitches and see how they work together. Threw enough strikes, you know, competed in the zone, was not frustrating to watch. You kind of baffling to watch sometimes, like how is this guy doing it given the organizations that he
the opposite.
Yeah, given the organizations that he went through over the course of the year, like you know, just that you know, the White Sox, a team that mined a workable pitcher out of it, but I guess, you know, comes down to innings and opportunities and the fact that the White Sox were able to get them through waivers. You know, they claimed him, and then when they put him on waivers, when they DFA'd him, like no other team claimed him because he kind of plinkoed his way down the hierarchy of Major League Baseball until he hit bottom. And if the White Sox don't want him, who does? But then that gave him the time to, you know, go to Charlotte and really work on starting and stretch out all the way and have that forgiveness. So I think they may as well take advantage of the way it benefited from the series events and how like his various DFAs unfolded and the order that they came in. And I don't like forecast like greatness from him. I think he'll kind of be that fringe starter lifestyle for him for the foreseeable future. But given the alternatives, given how he looked at the end of the year versus, like, say, Cannon, no reason not to give him the nod until we see how the White Sox fill in the gaps that they have over the course of the offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it for Gomez. I think a good goal right now is if you can get 15 starts out of him and reevaluate where everybody is. How close is Kai Bush and Drew Thorpe joining the rotation? And is Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith pitching a lot better in AAA? Like, you're hoping one of these internal options forces Gomez out. But as your number five starter, he can go five innings for you. You take it. At least to start the season, as long as he's healthy. So for my offseason plan project podcast listeners, maybe I'm crazy, Jim, but I do have Gomez right now penciled into my starting rotation. Like, going into this offseason right now on the marker board, like the roster marker board, if I had those magnets, I got Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Sean Burke, and Yoenis Gomez, and I got an open spot in the starting rotation. Like, I'm not comfortable putting Jonathan Cannon in there. So that's how I have going to the offseason. So clearly, for my offseason plan project, I need to figure out who's going to be that other starting pitcher for the Chicago White Sox on my projected 26-man roster. But I feel like this is going to be the story, and we're going to have this conversation again in spring training after the offseason settles, and we preview the 2026 season when James is in Arizona reporting back to us, Jim, on who is actually healthy and who is throwing well and who the new pitching coach and Brian Bannister like. But no matter who is in the starting rotation for the White Sox in 2026, I'm venturing a guess that the starting rotation is going to look a lot different at the end of 2026. The White Sox are not going to have five guys who make 25 or more starts for them in 2026. That'll be my bold projection here. I think only three guys made more than 20 starts this year for the White Sox. Shane Smith, Davis Martin, and I think Sean Burke. Those were the only three that started more than 20 games for the White Sox. So that kind of what makes this offseason plan project difficult for me, Jim, is here are some ideas that I'm throwing out there. Knowing full well, though, come July, this starting rotation could look a lot different. So those internal options I mentioned in the intro, how do you think this starting rotation looks towards the middle or even end of 2026 with the pitchers returning from injury and the prospects like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to look at the All-Star break, given that all these guys like Kai Bush, Drew Thorpe, Mace Adams, Corella, to a lesser extent, he's back in a minor league contract, but they all had Tommy John surgery between like late February and beginning of April. So they're all kind of looking at the All-Star break for a return. So I think some guys earlier, some guys later, but basically if a starter had Tommy John surgery, prospect starter had Tommy John surgery, just say All-Star break to make it simple. And then, you know, we'll see how they start throwing come June, probably, you know, maybe May. I think Adams was among the first to get it. I think maybe harder to keep them straight, but I think which ones were earliest. But yeah, I think come like May or June, you'll start hearing about guys throwing, probably in Arizona. And then you can kind of try to map out a course from there. But I think, yeah, you would hope that Smith, I think especially Hagen Smith, because you look at what Trey Savage has been doing in the postseason and drafted after Smith. Not unreasonable. I would say Savage's success, surprising this early in his career, this soon after being drafted. So not a reasonable expectation to hold most first-round starters to, but certainly by the end of a second full pro season for a guy who's winning awards in contention for awards in the collegiate ranks for a major program in a major conference, pitching for the highest stakes, that by the end of a second full pro season, he should be factoring into some starts, even if not like penciled in, like over the course of the last 2 months, like ready for an audition. Same thing with Schultz, I think, just because, I think Schultz is a little bit trickier just because he's coming off the injury, still building up in terms of a workload. I think the idea was that, like, maybe by the end of the year, he'd be pitching on the bullpen to kind of get his feet wet and then, you know, be a way to wind down a year of a full workload. So is that the case because he threw about the same amount of innings and didn't really advance his workload to where, like, if he factors in the major league staff, it'll be in a relief role? I would say Smith is probably more likely than Schultz to take starts, assuming that, you know, Smith is still pitching the way he is right now. I think the way he is right now can translate with a lot of strikeouts and a lot of walks, and you hope that the hits don't follow the walks. Because I think that is kind of the way he looked like in Arkansas, just against thinner lineups that maybe chased more. I think when it comes to the other three, like, that's where, yeah, I would hope Thorpe would return and look like the mid-rotation starter he was supposed to be. And so I think, you know, by the end of the year, if everybody's healthy-ish, you have Smith, you have two Smiths, you have Martin, and then you have Thorpe, and then, you know, maybe Burke, maybe Cannon, maybe Schultz, maybe. You have some flexibility there at the last spot, I think. But it would seem like, you know, if everything shakes out and health works out a little bit better than it did last year in terms of not having so many season crushing injuries on an individual level, that there should be some more stability at the end of next year than there was at the end of this year.
My bold prediction right now, before we get to the World Series and free agency starts, Hagen Smith is joining the White Sox rotation before Memorial Day. Ready or not, here's Hagen Smith. I feel like the White Sox are not going to waste too much more time with Hagen Smith in the minor leagues, and they're going to have him in the majors because they feel confident that he's going to be able to strike out major league batters. I'm looking at his Arizona Fall League, and as we record this, he's only made two starts, six innings. It's nine strikeouts. He's only allowed four hits. He hasn't allowed a run yet, but he's walked four batters. Like, to your point, Hagen Smith is going to have a high-ish whip because of the walks. And we could see Hagen Smith struck out 10 in five innings in his White Sox debut. He walked five.
Yeah.
He only allowed three hits, but he struck out 10. Like, that's the type of guy we're going to see from Hagen Smith. And I don't know what he could really do with a half a season in the International League to improve that. It might be one of those situations where Hagen needs to be with the major league staff, with your new pitching coach, to really get his command and control in order, where it doesn't, I don't know. I guess it raises the question. If you try to get him to focus more on command and control, but he loses some of his strikeout stuff, do you really want him to lose the strikeout stuff? Because Hagen Smith has the ability to strike out more than 170 batters next year for the Chicago White Sox if he makes 28 starts for them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty confident that he is going to be a strikeout master for the White Sox. He's going to walk 80. That's just the way that he is right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad prediction. You know, maybe not. You know, maybe he doesn't get called up to be a surefire starter for the rest of the season in May. But it might be a case where his stuff looks as good as it's supposed to, still walking too many, but, you know, he's still striking out a lot of AAA hitters and doing fine. Let's call him up to see how it works. And if he ends up, like, only lasting three innings a start because his pitch count's like 80, it maybe gives him enough insight into what's working, what's not working, and he goes back to Charlotte with something to work on and a better idea versus, okay, like, just getting by striking out 10 over five innings every game for Charlotte, but not necessarily improving. Kind of like, you know, the way we saw with when it came to, like, the Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, like that wave of starters, like, yeah, even Dylan Cease didn't stick right away. He had to learn how to pitch with his stuff, and he kind of went to the bullpen back and forth. So I think you could see that kind of same uncertainty early on. Just let's see how it looks. We're not making any promises about long-term viability. If he's somehow that rare pitcher who just looks he will throw five innings and strike out nine and walk four, no matter which level he's pitching at. Maybe he is that guy, but I imagine there will be some lumps taken along the way.
We talked about it briefly in our previous episode, but Grant Taylor, after sleeping on it and a few days to simmer, Jim, what do you think about the idea of maybe the White Sox approaching Taylor this offseason and say, you know what, we may try to stretch you out again. Prepare to not just be a one inning or two inning guy coming out of the bullpen.
I mean, it could. We've seen him do it before. Like, you know, we talked about, there isn't the same level of desperation that there was with Garrett Crochet in terms of like his team control period running out and not succeeding as a reliever. So why not have him start? Like, Chris Sale was somebody who logged a lot of innings before coming to the White Sox, you know, at Gulf Coast, Florida Gulf Coast. Whether it could work in a major league rotation was an open question, but like, there weren't questions about the durability. Whereas Taylor, you know, he's got the Shane Smith problem of just not coming close to 100 inning, or Smith did in his last year at the Brewers, but you know, just not being somebody who's shown any kind of durability over the course of a year. So you can't pencil him in to be like, he's going to last no matter what, just no matter how good he is. So I think those are the it's kind of like a two-front war he's fighting in terms of, you know, every indication of momentum should say like, hey, he's probably going to be a reliever for the rest of his White Sox career. Just because they did it this early, why would they do it? Like, the White Sox are not playing for postseason hopes that they needed a lockdown eighth inning arm. Like, they did it well before that. So it still strikes me as the bullpen is probably where he's going to be, but certainly like, if his side wants it, he's got the pitches for it. So it's just a matter of probably the first sign of not feeling good might be the last sign he has before he goes to the bullpen permanently. But I could see them trying it again, the way they kind of dip their toes in the water this year, because there is no harm in having him go back to, you know, he never went to Charlotte. So going to Charlotte and just trying to stretch out a little bit more, or even if like the White Sox want to try to have him pitch in the major league rotation with a piggyback reliever, to where like Taylor's going to throw three innings. Tyler Alexander's back and going to throw three innings for a complete different look. I could see both cases right now, but the bigger picture and the grander signs are pointing to, like, if they moved in relief this early, why would they do that? Probably because, yeah, like, they're not all that committed to the idea that he can start.
Okay, so here is my pipe dream, just looking at the internal options. If everything works out in the White Sox favor, complete opposite of 2025, where everything pans out on the starting rotation front, I think it'd be great for 2027 beyond if the White Sox are in rotation, everyone healthy being the big caveat, that you got the Smiths, Shane Smith and Hagen Smith, you got Noah Schultz, and then some combination of like Drew Thorpe or Davis Martin, guys that you feel comfortable could take on 140 innings. And that fifth spot, leaving it up to someone to prove themselves. Like, is Tanner McDougal, is he close enough? Is he someone that could challenge for some innings as a starter in 2026?
Yes, and that's a good point. Like, I had, thinking about all the injured pitchers, I forgot about the perfectly healthy one who did about as much as he could with the innings that he had for Winston-Salem and Birmingham. Yeah, he is going to be added to the 40-man roster. So he'll have that on the side, and we'll see how he handles. I imagine he'll be starting the season in Charlotte. Maybe he has a little bit more work to do in Birmingham. Depends, I guess, on how many fringe starters they add. Depends on, I think, Schultz and Smith, where they end up. Like, you could see McDougal start the year in Birmingham. But, yeah, he's another person who should factor in. He certainly logged enough innings to where he should be starting 5-6 months. Like, he shouldn't have the bullpen. Or the bullpen at the end of the year shouldn't be as natural an idea for him as it was for Schultz entering this past season. So, yeah, he's another guy to factor in.
Yeah, so I think that's my dream in 2026 for the White Sox, if they could finish the season knowing that Shane Smith, Hagen Smith, Noah Schultz, you still count on Davis Martin, I think. I like Davis Martin as a number 4, number 5 in the White Sox starting rotation. But if someone else can step up and surprise us, like a Tanner McDougal or Drew Thorpe comes back with more velocity, you have not only a starting rotation that I think has upside to be league average or better, but it's cheap. And it would be cheap going to 2027, where it gives the White Sox options to spend some cash and make some investments in other areas of the team to improve upon and give themselves a greater chance to compete in 2027 beyond. You have to take advantage of that because, as we know, controllable starting pitching doesn't stay cheap forever, especially through arbitration. And we know injuries happen all the time. But I think that's kind of my dream, and that's why I mentioned as far as this topic. For anyone doing the off-season plan project, whatever you come to the bottom of the plan and you have your projected roster, what you start with the starting rotation is probably not going to come anywhere close to how the White Sox will actually finish the starting rotation in 2026. So I think everybody needs to understand we all need some flexibility with our starting pitching plans and the offseason plan project, which brings up free agency and trades. Looking at the free agent market, man, for how little appetite Jerry Reinsdorf has in signing starting pitchers, especially when it comes to committing to more than 5 years with a starting pitcher, this is not a great free agent market, really, to line up for the White Sox. It is pretty top heavy of what guys are going to be commanding in free agency. So as I always make this analogy, we're in Target, and the first thing that you see at Target is that clearance rack. That's where the White Sox will be shopping for starting pitching. I'm looking at guys at $10 million or under on a one-year deal. And number one on my bullet point, Jim, Adrian Hauser. Why not? Let's bring him back. See if he can recapture the magic. What do you think of that idea of the White Sox bringing somebody back like Hauser?
I think it's fine. I think it's a case where he might get more appealing offers from teams that have more to play for, to where team shopping that kind of like, you know, Jose Quintana is, you know, an idea just because of White Sox needing somebody like him and, you know, having some kind of money to spend on him. But like, he went to the Brewers because he wants to win. So I think same thing with Hauser. Like, you get so many cracks at pitching for a good team, he should find Michael Lorenzen was another guy like we saw last year, who was perpetually somebody the White Sox seemed like they could employ, and he keeps finding like better options like the Royals or the Rangers to go to because some team offering him a comparable contract just has a little bit more to play for and is a little more interesting. So I think Hauser's there, but I think like, you know, you'd say like Hauser's too expensive. How about Eric Fetty would be the conversation among old friends, because, you know, Fetty certainly got put through the ringer, and, you know, a reunion might be what he has in mind just because it hasn't been so great for him since he left the White Sox.
One of those, please bring me back and fix me type of deals. I did have Eric Fetty as a bullet point. It'd be weird. And I wouldn't know what to expect, and I wouldn't be all that confident in the White Sox fixing Eric Fetty. But if he's cheap, I guess why not?
Yeah, I mean, like, if he's close to a minor league deal, or like Chris Flexen, you know, like kind of speaking of like starters who went overseas and came back and you had success and then didn't, like, you know, in signing that $1 to $2 million range for a guaranteed spot or guaranteed money, like, yeah, I mean, like, he might have fallen that far. So not out of the realm of possibility.
All right. One guy, and it may surprise some people, but he didn't pitch all that bad for the Texas Rangers, but he is 36 years old. Left-handed starting pitcher Patrick Corbin is a free agent, Jim. And I make this note, he has 5 consecutive seasons of pitching at least 150 innings. And this is where, if you're looking to add a veteran starter, I think this is the key metric. Like, man, the White Sox could use James Shields. Somebody that, you know, it's got that rubber arm. You don't care about the results, but you just need them to get through 6, maybe even 7 innings if they're feeling good and it doesn't look all that bad. They could really use that type of guy. And I feel like Patrick Corbin, since he's done it the last 5 years, and if no other teams are willing to take him on, after maybe a bounce back season for Patrick Corbin, as far as in terms for him and just how bad things got with the Washington Nationals towards the end of that tenure. One of those 1-year deals. If nobody else wants you, Patrick, the White Sox will take you on. Please pitch 150 innings for us in 2026, or pitch so well that we trade you at the deadline.
Yeah, he's used to leading the league in losses, so that certainly helps. Like, I was looking at his numbers from the last 6 years after the Nationals won the World Series. And have you ever heard of Hugh Mulcahy, a pitcher for the Phillies in the 1930s? His nickname was Losing Pitcher. And it's because he went 45-89. The Phillies were terrible. Twice, lost over 20 games, but actually wasn't bad. Like, he was slightly below average when it came to ERA, like actually made an All-Star game 1 year, actually garnered MVP votes because he pitched a lot of innings, topped out at 280. But just because he was the pitcher of record for a team that was terrible, like, he ended up taking all his losses. So his nickname was Losing Pitcher. He was 45-89 lifetime. So Patrick Corbin, since the World Series year, since 2020, he's 40-81. So every time I see 40-80 in a win and loss column, I think of Hugh Mulcahy, Losing Pitcher, and think like he is the losing pitcher for this generation. But he just happened to have two careers. So one where he is very good for a stretch, and then one where he is not. And the White Sox would be getting the guy who is not. I guess the one guy we haven't talked about is Martin Perez. You know, he would like to be back, or he talked about wanting to come back. I think that shoulder makes it dicey, but I guess you can lump him in the conversation here. The one guy I had, and he's somebody who's injured, got injured last year with the Achilles rupture, was Griffin Canning. He was on my list last year of 1-year rental starters because he has a varied arsenal, is a good defensive pitcher, which the White Sox like. They like guys who can lower their own or out pitch their FIP by themselves, which I think Canning can. And he pitched pretty well for the Mets, leaning more heavily on breaking stuff. And I think he improved his curveball to where, like, he was a different enough pitcher to buy into the improvement. And then he ruptured his Achilles. So depends on how much time he's going to be missing over the course of the 2026 season, because it doesn't seem like an injury where he should be back by opening day. But given that he had settled for a 1-year contract before, given that the White Sox will have first half starts to absorb, I wonder if he's somebody who could appeal to them, and maybe vice versa if he's ready by May or June.
Yeah, I like that idea. Griffin Cannon was also on my list, so that's a great call, Jim. A couple of guys, Brian Bannister can fix him, ? Tristan McKenzie, is he done? Would you have a buy flyer on Tristan McKenzie if he were available?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's somebody, I think about Noah Syndergaard, watching him with the Knights, name brand value. And if he gets to the White Sox, I mean, something terrible's happened. But certainly, depending on whether he gets a guaranteed contract or not, could be a case where, there's no such thing as a bad – there is such a thing as a bad 1-year contract, I think. I think that's overblown, but there is no such bad thing as a minor league contract.
No. Marcus Stroman, I don't know where he is at his career. He refused to go to the bullpen for the Yankees and got cut after the trade deadline. And he's on the other side, and he is 5'7". Doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. Marcus Stroman, would you give him a shot?
I guess a nice way to put it is he seems ornery. even when he was good, he was kind of perpetually aggrieved. So I don't know if he's somebody who's going to age well, or at least age gracefully, even in terms of a veteran mentor, somebody who's Martin Perez. You don't know how much he's going to give you, but he'll be good for the guys around you. I don't know if Stroman operates like that, because he's kind of bounced around a lot, and no team has really been sad to see him go, it seems. He seems to wear out his welcome. So yeah, I think he'll probably find opportunity somewhere, but I think for a team like the White Sox, where they probably want to have stable veterans around, thinking about, there's no such thing as a bad minor league contract, unless it goes to Mike Clevinger. I think we can say at this point, given that we've had to have conversations around him for the past couple of years. But for all of Clevenger's, all the reasons we hate talking about him, like, never heard a bad thing about him in terms of just like how he was in a Charlotte pitching staff. And so, like, he hung around the whole year because, like, apparently he was good to have in terms of just being around to take starts, pitch innings, not have to give the pitching coaches and manager somebody to manage or think about in terms of, like, he can throw five, he can throw six, he can get beat up and take a big inning and still come back on the mound. We don't need to baby him. And seemed like he was, a fine, or a good enough resource, I should say, for other pitchers. That's how it was talked about as far as why he was still around. I don't think, it doesn't seem like Stroman has even that going for him, to where, if it starts going bad, I think, like, you know, it's going bad for him personally, and there's no way to preserve value otherwise.
And then the other option that I have, because again, the free agent market is not great on the lower side, the Rule 5 draft, yep, which the White Sox could
apparently
pursue again.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, they got their best reliever and their best starting pitcher out of it, so why not?
Yeah. Yes, but I look forward to seeing what you guys do on the starting pitching front with your offseason plan projects. Pulling back the curtain here, Jim and I are going to see the rest of Game 7 of the American League Championship Series, because as we're recording this, it's going to the bottom of the eighth inning, and George Springer hit a 3-run homer to give the Blue Jays the 4-3 lead. So we're going to see on how that game finishes, and we'll preview the World Series in our next episode of the Sox Machine podcast. Our next one, we're going to be taking a look at the catchers, which should be a strong point of the White Sox, unless you do want to trade Edgar Caro, and the outfield. Oh my Lord. This is where you're going to be spending a lot of time with your offseason projects, is what to do in the outfield.
One thing to say about, we can't really talk about the game given that it's one run at the time we're recording this, but I am happy to see Springer having the season that he's having and the postseason having, just because I remember when he was a free agent, like, the price for quality impact outfielders kept dropping, and like the White Sox didn't want to, a Bryce Harper. And so it's like, okay, well, here's George Springer for half the years and half the cost. Still gives you what you need in terms of can cover center, but if he has to bounce to a corner, should be a good corner outfielder, draws walks, hits for power, why not? And then, like, he kind of faded early to where, he's a point for why the White Sox would never make such an investment and why they would spend that money on Andrew Benintendi instead, because he's cheaper. And to see him bounce back and to see, like, the skills went out in the end and have that ability to rebound the way that seems like Benintendi does not, I feel validated by it personally.
Did you ever watch the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I've seen, like, individual episodes. It's one of those shows where I want to start from the beginning, but just haven't carved out the time yet.
Okay, you're very Captain Holt moment for you. Vindication!
Exactly. I like it. Yeah, I'm in.
But again, we'll recap what happened in the championship series. We're going to watch the rest of the Seattle-Toronto game, so then you guys know we're on the podcast front. You can all giggle at us, and we can see on how it ends as we wrap up this episode. But again, our next podcast episode, we're going to record that on Wednesday night, so we'll preview the World Series that starts on Friday. The Dodgers await whoever, Toronto or Seattle, should be a great World Series. But thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Sox Machine podcast. We hope that this conversation about the starting pitching for the Chicago White Sox, where they are as you work your offseason plan projects, do help you with your offseason thinking, what you want the White Sox or what you would recommend the White Sox to do this upcoming offseason. If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the social media platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow our beat reporter, James Fegan, at JR Fegan. You can follow myself at SoxMachine_Josh. We're also on Instagram. We're trying to grow our following over there. So if you can, give us a follow at Sox Machine. If you follow me on Instagram, I love posting pictures of food. So if you love those types of things, of where to eat in Chicago, I'm your guy. If you love our work at Sox Machine and would like to help out, especially with during the off season, and we got trips coming up, sending James to Las Vegas for the GM meetings. We're planning on being at the winter meetings down in Orlando in December, and you want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball. Go to SoxMachine.com/products to sign up and subscribe to SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans give you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. Unlocks the comments section for you as well. We have additional tiers of support, one of those being our veteran committee. And with our veteran committee members, we're going to be meeting with them later this week, talking about our 2026 off-season plans. They also have the opportunity to gain direct access to Jim and James through our group chat as well. So those are perks that you'd be interested in because you love our work and you want to help to support Sox Machine. Go to SoxMachine.com/products and sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.